Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mallow, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 144, being recorded on the 14th of September, 2016, with special guest, James Baker. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have Kale, Evan, and our special guest, James. Now, before we give James a chance to introduce himself and talk about a very interesting topic, I think it's something that our listeners will like. Let's do a quick rundown on some of the latest news in the Azure world. And it's been a busy week compared to some of the prior weeks. This one's been busy. But I just want to start with Evan. Did you see my note about the... Didn't we have like an Azure outage last week?
Thanks, Sajid. This is not nice. So unfortunately, you know, we did have some problems on Friday. I was lucky enough to be off, so I certainly appreciate my colleagues' hard work to get everything, you know, kind of handled and reach out to customers and kind of keep everybody in the loop. But yeah, we had some networking issues, right? We had some, improper routes were advertised to the wrong places, and you know, if you know networking, that can cause all kinds of cascading problems. Storage had challenges. A whole number of services had challenges. What happened though, it also impacted two regions, right? West Europe and North Europe, because the problem was in West Europe, but West and North are a geo replication pair. Right from storage. We require both sides to be available for this, for you know, replication to happen. And when replication isn't working, we actually are going to block access to the storage account, right? Because we don't want you to be reading. You know, there's depending on how you configure your storage accounts, it's kind of like the do I want asynchronous updates so that you know I eventually get consistent, or you know am I trying to make sure that everything is real time? Am I blocking on stuff? We want to make sure that you're not going to just be reading data that's horrifically stale.
Right.
Because asynchronous is just not happening at all. And so that went down. So that kind of magnified the problem at that point. They fixed it relatively quickly. I don't remember the exact amount of time that everybody was down. But as you can imagine, in support, we're still kind of working through some of this backlog, you know, getting out to customers, making sure that they understand what happened and, you know, doing what we have to do to, you know, make it right with them. There are also, unfortunately, probably some false positives.
Yeah. So
my encouragement to the audience is if you had a problem on Friday and you feel like we closed your case incorrectly, like you think it wasn't related to the outage, you know, reach out to us again. We're happy to dig in. We are admittedly not as good at combing through the high volumes that we get when these things happen to make sure there's no false positives. We try and minimize it, but there's always some.
Right. Okay, that's good. I'm glad. I was impressed with the amount of detail that they provided in terms of the root cause analysis. I think they're still working through some of the other issues in terms of root cause, but this one was very nicely documented.
Yeah, and actually, you know, that's a good thing to call out because, you know, I've been in this space for a long time. You know, years ago, we would have said, yep, we had a problem, we fixed it.
Right.
And we've heard pretty clearly from our customer base that, you know, the details need to be there. Right, they need to understand that we know well enough what happened to really make sure it doesn't happen again.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to quickly touch upon that, and thank you for that quick update.
Yeah, so thanks for bringing the name back. Geez, really,
I'm here to help you. Don't worry, Evan. let's get on to some recent updates, and the one I'll start with one of the ones that I put in there, and then I know Kale put a bunch of them in. I think we talked about the data factory, right? Azure Data Factory. You know, so you can just copy data from various sources and things like that. And all the sources have been basically Azure sources, right? Like SQL Server or Blobs, etc. Now you can actually copy data from Amazon S3 or Amazon Redshift directly. So it's part of the the copy wizard that they have in there, the Azure Data Factory, allows you to use Amazon S3 or Redshift as a source, which is kind of interesting now. So not only are they, starting to, I guess they want to make sure that a lot of customers that use the dual cloud feature, where they have one cloud, they have both the clouds for backup and redundancy, that they have a way to copy data between the clouds easily. And I think this is the nice way that they've done it with the Data Factory.
I didn't get a chance to look at this feature. Did either of you guys notice, does it allow you to go the other way as well? Right, so we can copy data. I mean, the big announcement that I saw was AWS
I
into
thought it
Azure.
was
Is it
from.
bidirectional?
I thought it was just one way,
Okay.
but I could be wrong. I thought it was from Amazon to
Okay.
Azure. Yeah,
Yeah,
it is
I didn't
only
think
one
so. I was
way.
just curious.
Was that
All of
James?
the IW, all of the AWS are just sources.
Yeah,
Okay.
these sources only. Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, so then Evan, you had a main Kale, you put a bunch in there. Anything you want to start with? I know.
Let's guess which one
Let's
it is.
guess which one he's going to start with
Oh
here.
yeah, we have to. You guys haven't talked about blockchain enough, so we have to have something about that in there. Now the DEF CON, it's a big Ethereum conference, is going on next week in Shanghai, so be there. Microsoft's a platinum sponsor for this event, so it's a pretty big deal in the blockchain world. So it's going to be a kind of a week-long thing with conferences and meeting with some of the leaders in Asia on some of the things they're working on blockchain space. A couple of the other
And
ones.
you're going to be there, right?
Yeah, I'll be there.
So we'll be talking to you in Shanghai next week. That's great.
Yeah. As long as I can make the internet work, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, the other ones that stuck out, there's a couple of them. One that kind of pertains to the talk today with James, but around storage. Actually, there was the GA for the storage service encryption or data at rest with Blob Storage. So that's out there now. Couple little things to watch out for there. If you read the blog article or you start working with this, relatively easy to enable, and it works pretty much on all of our storage options. But one thing is, it's like retro. Like basically, once you enable it, these things get encrypted when they're written or updated. Not, okay, I enabled it and I have a couple terabytes of data here. It's just going to go retroactively encrypt that. That's not happening. So keep that in mind, and make sure you're not making the wrong assumptions there with that.
So that sounds like somebody that wants to encrypt everything probably would do have to do some sort of background job, just go through and touch everything just to force it.
Read and write. Well, they have to actually read it all out and write it back, to encrypt it. Yeah. So, Evan, is there any one that you want to touch on?
Yeah, the only other one is just the PHP security vulnerability, right? So we updated the runtimes. Whether for 5.5.5.6 and 7.0 to address it. We also, and this is, just like we haven't talked about SQL yet today, so we got to. The PHP 7.0 driver for SQL Server is there now as well. It's enabled by default. So this is going to give, again, even more flexibility for using PHP against SQL Server and Azure SQL Database.
Nice. Well, there's a couple that I really liked in there. Of course, my favorite topic is Service Fabric, and finally, we talked about this. They're porting Service Fabric to Linux, and they've finally announced a date when that will be available, at least in preview form, and that would be at the Ignite conference. I'm very excited about that. It's kind of what we expected, which is it's going to be available for Ubuntu Linux initially and Red Hat to follow, and of course it's going to have the same, all the reliable services, reliable actors, stateless services, etc., the same things that we've come to love in the .NET Windows world. But you're going to do it with Java, right? So you're going to have a Java SDK to with these programming models that we've talked about, and you can then just use the command line, the Azure command line tools to deploy, all the cool stuff that we've had before. Excuse me. So that's something that's very exciting and coming up in Ignite. And also, there's this thing with the Azure Event Hubs archive, which I think is. This is something that I think a lot of people that use Event Hub struggle with. event hubs getting a stream of data coming in, and like, what do you do with the data, right? You have to process it. And so typically you're kind of writing all this very complex jobs to say, okay, I'm going to take data for the last 5 minutes and then batch it up and then, do some processing on it and things like that. And, you generally have to do quite a bit of work to get that done. So now they have an archive function that kind of automates a lot of that. So, you just to configure it, you say, hey, every so many minutes or seconds, I want to take all the data that's come in, streamed in, and just drop it into a blob, right? And give it some kind of a file name based on the date time stamp. And that's it. And that gets done automatically for you. And then you can have like an Azure batch job that picks it up and starts processing it on the other end. So I thought that was a cool feature there.
One last thing about, you mentioned Ignite, just to call out to our listeners, anybody that is going to Ignite, there's a blog post out there from the PM that there's going to be an Azure Stack meetup at Ignite. So if you're going to that event, you might want to look it up, because basically a lot of the people, you can network with the product team there on, the Azure Stack offering and the stuff that's happening there. And there's a invite link up there, a registration page. You can make sure you fill it out if you're thinking about going to that, because I'm sure it'll be really popular.
Yeah, I would say, if you're, actually our audience, just by definition, are interested in Azure, it's going to be a cool week. Lots and lots of things that are coming, that obviously we can't talk about publicly yet, but yeah, a lot of neat things getting released as part of Ignite.
And it's a good thing you mentioned, you guys bring it up, because we should also Ignite, what's nice about it is that it got this nice combination of not only dev stuff but also IT stuff, deployment and all the other stuff that goes along with an IT department. So I think it's a nice combination, and like Build, which is very dev focused. So I hope I'm sure listeners, I mean whoever's going there will get a lot out of it. So without further ado, let's turn the mic over to our guest, James Baker. And at first, start by requesting James to introduce himself and give us a little bit about background as to what he does at Microsoft. Thank you, James.
Hi, Sujit. Thanks very much. Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. My name's James Baker. I've been at Microsoft a bit over 8 years now. I've worked in a number of the product groups, including SQL Server, where I worked on SSIS for quite a while. Worked on the what was originally called Project Isotope, which has now become HD Insight, and then more recently worked on Azure Active Directory. Right now, I'm working in the Developer Experience Group, which I happen to think is the best job in Microsoft, because we get to do things that you, the customers, really, really need out of the platform, and we can go and sort of enable that for you, which is, very sort of helpful for customers, but it's also great for me because, I'm not doing something that a PM sort of thought up and put on a schedule. I'm working directly with customers and understanding their ambitions on the platform and trying to make that happen, which is great.
That's excellent. Yeah, and that kind of leads us to how we got met within the company, and I followed some work that you were doing in the Azure storage space. I guess maybe with some of your customer, but some of your own customers, and some of the work that you've done there, especially with this project called Dash. So maybe you can just give us a quick, high-level overview on what on how you came about with that, with that whole solution there.
Yeah, so Project Dash, which is an acronym for Data at Scale Hub, was something that we started initially with a lot of the analytics partners. The HD Insight team was working, which uses the WASB, which is under the covers using Azure Storage, was finding that they were running up against a bunch of issues, and certain larger partners were having to do lots of ugly workarounds to try and get around some of the limitations that the platform was imposing on them. And concurrent with the analytics folks, we were starting to see a number of typically smaller ISVs, but ISVs generally, that had either very, very large data sets, or sort of data sets that were georeplicated or had certain characteristics that the Azure Storage Service didn't handle very well natively. And what we did find was that all of these partners, all of these customers were working a variety of sort of mitigations and sort of workarounds for some of these challenges. And we started observing that there was recurring patterns there. And once we sort of identified a couple of these patterns, we said, well, you know, why do we need all of these partners to keep repeating all of these patterns? And so why don't we just go and build something that implements the pattern and makes that available, saves the partner a bunch of work having to do that. And so that's where Dash came out of. Dash initially was targeted at providing relief around the throughput and the total storage or total volume constraints of a single storage account. And for those that sort of aren't aware, each storage account in, I believe, the US data centers has a 30 gigabit a second input or ingress limit and a, sorry, egress limit and a 20 gigabit a second ingress limit. And it also has a maximum of half a petabyte of total storage. Other regions have different limits, but they're all less than that. And so while that didn't sort of impact many of the sort of day-to-day customers of Azure Storage, we were finding that especially in the analytics workloads and especially with some of the larger ISVs, that they were getting throttled by that. And throttling's a little bit insidious because your workload doesn't stop. You don't sort of suddenly everything starts falling over and all of your alerts start getting triggered and you go and fix it. What tends to happen is that everything just starts to slow down a bit and then a bit more and then a bit more. And it's not until the sort of operations people go and look at how the application's working and realize that it's working really, really slowly. And that, when they do recourse analysis, turns out to be because of the storage service was throttling the throughput because you'd started exceeding some of those limits. So what we sort of discovered is that people most that were encountering this were mostly aware of a pattern whereby you can start spanning across multiple storage accounts. It seems a relatively straightforward fix, but there's pretty good sort of architectural reasons why this workaround works, but what they were doing is sort of simply just spanning their multi-petabyte or their very high throughput workloads across multiple storage accounts, and that was providing them relief from their constraints or the limits that storage was imposing.
So James, this is you know, analogous, it sounds like, to the Elastic pools. And the what do we call before it was Elastic? It was in the SQL Azure space where you could span your data across multiple.
Oh, the federation. Stuff. Yeah.
But kind of analogous. That's the SQL version, and this is kind of the storage version of it, where you're abstracting that from the application, but you really are spanning all these different resources under the covers.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly more federated query where it really was we're partitioning up data and spreading it across multiple servers, and now the federated query allows me to go and query across those multiple servers. Elastic Pools is sort of addressing a slightly different problem, but, you know, it's all about sort of how do we manage these things at sort of hyperscale, which is what cloud computing is supposed to be all about. And so, you know, when we discovered that this pattern was recurring across many partners, we was kind of like, okay, well, you know, we can't. The problem, of course, once you do that, is that now you have to start tracking where your data actually lands. You know, is it in this storage account or is it in that storage account? And so you start to need to have a separate lookup of that data. And then it's a question of, okay, well, where does that lookup occur? And especially if you've got lots of clients it sort of breaks the application pattern where you have to go and sort of do a namespace lookup to find where a particular blob or object lives and then go and make the request. So people were doing that and sort of getting away with it, but it was not very clean. We also observed other patterns where there were client-side caches or sort of stable hashing algorithms that folks were using to sort of be able to know where a particular blob object would be without having to look it up. But all of these workarounds had sort of constraints or restrictions of one kind or the other and were not either not very clean or not very flexible or were a combination of both. So what we decided to do with Dash is say, okay, well, we can imagine a sort of a proxy service, which instead of being a proxy, because clearly we didn't want to be a proxy where the proxy would be having to be servicing all of that throughput load, which was clearly sort of beyond the or not meeting the constraints of providing a lightweight sort of look-aside service. And so what we decided to do is say, okay, let's encapsulate the namespace lookup in this service, but then simply redirect the client back to where the storage account where we found the required object and have them look up that way.
And so, just redirecting them then.
Exactly right. And then we're sort of saying, okay, well, how do we sort of bundle that up? And what we decided to do is say, okay, well, let's fully implement the REST API that Azure Storage or Azure Blob Storage advertises and implements. Let's go and re-implement that. And that's actually a fairly simple, straightforward service. So that wasn't a particularly difficult thing to do. And then we used a trick of simply using HTTP redirects to transparently redirect the client to where the storage account was using SAS URIs. And so the client didn't even need to have the storage account keys for all of the backing data accounts, as we called them. And so this gave us sort of the best of both worlds, where we had a nicely, cleanly encapsulated namespace lookup service, and we weren't suffering the performance penalty of being a full proxy. And so it worked really, really well for a number of applications. We did find that some of the storage client SDKs had to be modified to transparently handle those HTTP redirections, the 302 redirections that we were sending back. But once we modified them, they were working completely fine. And then, for instance, the .NET storage SDK automatically handles following of redirections, and so we didn't actually have to do any modifications at all to the .NET SDK.
So you can really just stick right underneath transparently for some of those then.
Yeah, exactly right. That was one of the design objectives, is that we wanted to be as clean and transparent as we could and not sort of suffer a huge performance penalty.
Yeah.
And so that's how we sort of ended up with the design of Dash, and the successful sort of rollout and implementation. So subsequent to that, this was all going on in a time prior to, for instance, the Azure Data Lake service. And so when the folks that were using HD Insights using the WASB driver, we successfully worked with a number of those guys, got them to work. Subsequent to doing that, the Azure Data Lake service came through and provided many of those qualities, the limitless storage that Dash was trying to offer. And so we sort of were able to move out of the analytics space to some extent. There's still people that are using it with HD Insight clusters, but where we moved more towards is now looking at people that are using Azure Storage directly to sort of address a number of those concerns as well.
So James, if people are looking, is this something that like our listeners, if they're interested in seeing this or even kind of playing around with this, is this something they can just go get from somewhere? Like is this up in GitHub, or is there any other place they should pull the bits from if they want to try this out?
Yeah, exactly. So we, that's exactly where we've got it. We do all of this work up in GitHub. And there's a couple of ways. So I'll give you the GitHub address. I don't know whether we advertise this via written, but it's github.com/microsoftdx/- is the where the GitHub repo is. And up there you'll find in the wiki section of that repo, we've got all of our documentation up there, including quite a bit of the sort of distribution techniques. And so obviously one way you can get your hands on the bits is just clone that repo, build it, and it's got very small build dependencies, you know, the Azure SDK and .NET or Visual Studio, I should say, and that's pretty much it. And then you can deploy it yourself onto Azure. Other ways we've found folks wanted to use it is, for instance, through launching ARM templates. And so we've got a couple of ARM templates up there. There's a variety of them. One of them is to deploy the bits pre-compiled in standalone mode. Another one is to co-deploy with an HD Insight cluster. What else we got? Oh, we're about to do our V2 release, which is featuring a couple of new features, and so we'll have an ARM template up there shortly to co-deploy with a Cassandra cluster as the backing store. But so there's a number of ways in which you can sort of get the bits out. I mean, we have pre-built binaries which you can deploy manually if you want to do that as well, or just use the ARM template. So the great thing about the ARM templates is there's a deploy to Azure button on the GitHub page, and you just fire that up, and there's probably four parameter infos that you put in there, including a service name, and you're sort of done at that point. It sort of it runs as a good old-fashioned cloud service, and so there's no needing to make sure that the operating system's being patched, or is it available, or is that getting load balanced, or anything like that. That all works pretty straightforward. And so effectively you have a PaaS-based cloud service offering, you know, in three clicks type thing.
So, and for that PaaS service, it sounds like it, you know, if you guys really, it sounds like because you were shooting for lightweight, aka low resource consumption, these PaaS VMs probably don't have to be super huge VMs with, you know, multiple, many you know, instances behind it. Is that my good guess about that?
That's certainly where we're targeting it. The great thing about it is they can sort of scale from, you know, fairly high load, and you know, you sort of don't need Dash until you've got a fairly high load. So, yeah, right. We sort of generally go for what we'd typically see in a deployment is for four D3 instances. And so, you know, if you're storing in the order of greater than half a petabyte of data, the costs associated with running Dash are insignificant relative to the costs of storage at that point. So, you know, it does tend to be a relatively low-cost option for you to run.
Nice.
And James, because you're doing this using multiple storage accounts and those things, I'm sure this is probably in the wiki, but, like, can you give us a sense for, like, what would be – is there an upper limit then to, like, what a single file can be here, or how much data I can actually stack? Is it just keep adding more storage accounts and we can just exponentially keep going up in size?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. We've never found a point at which it caps out. The biggest test we've done is with we've done two distinct large tests. One, which is with a 512 node HD Insight cluster. We were able to measure about 400 gigabit a second throughput out of that cluster. So each cluster was averaging about a gigabit, or just a little bit under a gigabit of throughput. And we certainly weren't able to observe that Dash was the limiting factor in that. And so, you know, I think that was running 12 D3 nodes on the Dash cluster. They were all handling about 4,000 requests a second, so we were doing, you know, in the order of 40,000 requests a second, and that was, you know, where we were topping out was on the HD Insight backend. You know, that those nodes couldn't go any harder. The high scale experiment we did was with Azure Batch, where we deployed 15,000 cores, and they were all concurrently reading, you know, a relatively small data size, but that was able to push through. I can't remember the details of that, but
a lot.
Yeah, it was pushing a lot, and what we were observing was that, you know, other things were constraining the throughput. You know, the upper limit of the throughput, other than Dash. Dash, you know, the combination of Dash, and networking. Networking is the thing that we're obviously very sensitive about. And the networking, you know, when you're sort of getting almost half a terabit of networking throughput out of a single application, that's sort of impressive. So we weren't observing any slowdown in networking. The storage accounts were working well at that. I think we had 32 storage accounts running, or actually maybe it was more, might have been 64 storage accounts running at that point. You know, we weren't observing that storage accounts were slowing down at all. I think that the current version is actually constrained to a maximum of 16 storage accounts. The version that we're just about to release is completely unconstrained in the maximum number of storage accounts that you can add in. And so, as you say, Kale, you know, you can just start with a small number of storage accounts and just keep adding storage accounts. And basically all you have to do that is, you know, add the storage account name and its key to Dash's configuration, and Dash will just start using it. It'll start distributing blobs out to those new storage accounts. The one thing you can't do is remove storage accounts. So we've had a couple of people sort of speak to us about, oh, is there a way I can shrink down? But the reality is there's sort of no compelling reason to shrink down, because you're not, it, having a storage account isn't costing you anything. And so,
yeah, anything,
you know, even if your load diminishes, if having that larger number of storage accounts isn't a problem. And so we've never written the functionality to go and say, okay, decommission a storage account and redistribute its contents back over the remaining storage accounts. But that's probably a trivial feature that we could go and add if people really wanted it.
Go ahead.
Evan, finish your thought.
I was going to say, so that brings two questions to mind. One, I need your budget, first off. Just 15,000 cores alone, even at the slightly reduced prices we pay, it's a bill and a half.
The
second piece is, and I'm in support, right? So this is kind of always in my world, whenever there's these products and features that are, you know, Microsoft sanctioned and the right people in Microsoft are doing it and they're working with the engineering teams really well, but it's not the engineering team. What, you know, so let's say a customer calls, you know, and say, hey, I'm using this cool thing called Dash, the DX team says it's all sanctioned and it's all good. What's kind of the support story? Is it, you know, I mean, is this something we're actively not just kind of proof of concept, but we're saying, hey, customers, go use this? I mean, what is that kind of story there?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a great point. And, I mean, the point on the budget is a legitimate one as well, because when you're dealing with these levels of scale, it costs an insignificant amount of money to run, but, you know, presumably you're making money in your application, and so, therefore, you're just making more money. But it's a great point, Evan, about the supportability around it. You know, for a long time, we, you know, especially working with ISV partners, we said, oh, okay, well, it's up on GitHub. You know, there's a community support policy around it. And the reality is we're very responsive. You know, I tend to, if folks are experiencing problems or just looking for guidance or whatever, myself or one of the other guys that are working on it, just jump on straight away and help the partner out. And there's, you know, it's tends to be more responsive than the product group support. But having said that, you know, for people to sort of put their mission critical workloads and commit to this sort of thing. At the end of the day, you do need to be able to call CSS. You do need to be able to have product group support with us. And that's something we've recognized for a while. What I can say on that is that the Azure storage team themselves have recognized that the limits on single storage accounts is an issue for them. And they are doing work to address that as sort of a first-class feature of the service. However, what that means is a significant amount of re-architecting of the Azure storage service. And so that's not a thing that they can turn around very quickly. That simply by the nature of where the storage team sits in the stack, they have to be very, very conservative about the way they make changes to their architecture, because at the end of the day, everything lives on service. If they make a small change, which looks fairly benign, that turns out to cause problems, then that really is an issue. So what the storage team are doing are addressing the thing, and now they're looking and saying, okay, should we use something like Dash as an interim solution that it will be fully supported by the product team that you can call CSS on, and make that an interim solution until what they're calling the limitless storage account feature is delivered.
Right.
And that's something we're currently in the process of discussions about, and sort of certainly my hope is that that's a thing we can move on, because I see, in the work that I do in DX, I see many, many, or an increasing number of partners being impacted by these scale limits. And quite frankly, it's just a thing relative to AWS and relative to GCE that Azure storage doesn't look so good on. And so, partners are looking at that and saying, do I have to build a thing myself? No, I don't. Great, you're offering me a thing. Well, as long as it's supported, great. It turns out to be sort of the same level of effort for them. So, we're currently working on making that supported as a first-class service prior to the limitless storage work coming out.
Okay, so it sounds like you guys have absolutely thought about this, and really the state today is well-tested, you guys are well-plugged in with the right architects and the right engineering teams to make sure that, it's generally going to work very well for customers, but they do have to go in a little bit open-eyed, and understand kind of where the boundaries are as far as what they can kind of just drop in and not think about it versus kind of very, very, very intentionally do this kind of stuff and be aware of what it's doing.
Yeah, exactly. And part of this model is that we love folks when they pick it up off GitHub to reach out to us and say, I've got this high scale workload, and I want to use Dash to help solve some of the problems. And I just want to be aware of these workloads because they're very interesting to us from a scale perspective. And just knowing what these workloads are helps inform us how to better improve the platform going forward for what is going to become increasingly a more common scale of workload. When Azure Storage originally had these half a petabyte limits imposed quite some time ago, there was probably, a handful of workloads on the planet that exceeded them. Today, we're seeing probably 30 a month that are exceeding them, and that number is increasing. So, it's great that the cloud is able to enable this level of scale that was sort of not previously seen in workloads. But it's incumbent upon the platform to support that level of scale in a really, really strong way. So that's what we're trying to do.
Cool.
Hey, James, I just a couple of questions that might seem a little silly, but can you use like standard storage with this, or do you have to use premium storage?
So absolutely, you can use standard storage, and quite frankly, the majority of the app, or pretty much all of the applications, I'm not aware of any application that's using premium storage. But bear in mind, so the one thing that Dash can't do, even though it fully implements the REST API, there is, you know, and the majority of use of premium storage is for VHD images, using page blobs to back virtual machines. That channel uses a private channel which we can't hook into. So you can't put Dash in between, you know, as a way of distributing the throughput of VHD attached disks. And so that's kind of all that that premium storage gets used for. Moving forward, premium storage will be available in blob store, you know, in block blobs and in tables. And so absolutely we'll work to make sure that Dash is doing its thing perfectly for those sorts of storage types. The good thing is that the sort of given the design approach that we've taken, is that all we need to do is just keep up with the REST API, and the and you know, as a consequence, it kind of works from there on.
Right, everything comes automatically after that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But you do, today you do support like blobs, queues, like things like
so that. So we don't support queues. That's we're trying to get our head around it. I mean, and if partners have got or listeners have got a scenario where they need higher scale out of queues, I'd love to hear from you, because we just don't know what that sort of looks like from a queue perspective.
Good point. Yeah, I mean, queues are typically small, they're not big, and things like that. So, yeah.
What we have seen a number of interesting scenarios for enabling tables. Today, Dash doesn't support tables, and so you know, it's primarily designed around block blobs. But Shweta, one of the girls on the team, is actively looking at tables and saying, okay, well, you know, what is the scale relief that that we need in tables? As it turns out, one of the most common things is the number of operations per second per partition in tables. And so we're looking at ways in which we can scale that number up using similar sort of techniques to what Dash uses over block blobs.
Okay. So by using Dash in front of a standard storage, does that effectively increase like the IOPS that you get, like, if you aggregate all of that together?
Yeah, so yes, it does. That's one of the design goals of it. When you want increased IOPS, it's a special deployment model for that, because when you sort of think about the request flow, and there's a pretty cool diagram on the wiki page on GitHub that sort of explains what's going on. The way we look up where each blob resides is that we have a dedicated storage account, which we call our namespace account, which has a complete listing of all of the blob objects in the Dash virtual account, but that are zero length. They don't contain any content. And we just store some metadata against each of those blob entries that say which account the blob is stored in. So that's a sort of a great way of doing it. It's very fast, has very little overhead, certainly no overhead in terms of cost, and so it works really, really well. The one thing about that, though, is that that's the point of convergence around all of the Dash traffic. It sort of converges in on that namespace account. Mm-hmm. And so if you wanted to, for instance, go over the 20,000 IOPS limit, that would effectively be trying to make more than 20,000 IOPS requests against the namespace account, which obviously then we'd start getting throttling on the namespace account.
Got it.
And so what we do in those cases is that we have a special deployment topology which stands up a look-aside Redis cache, whereby we more or less cache not all of the namespace account, because, you know, the design is set up to hold trillions of objects, but you know, and that would exceed the normal capacity of a standard Redis cache. But what we do is sort of store the most recently looked up ones, which just simply reduces the amount of throughput on the namespace account. And so we've been able to get well in excess of, I think, 150,000 IOPS out of a single virtual storage account at that, using that
technique. Very impressive. Very impressive. That's great. Excellent. Thanks, James. Thanks for clarifying that for me. And you answered my question about whether VMs are supported. And, of course, they're not supported right now because of the back channel that they use.
Yeah.
I will jump in and say that for customers that are trying to deal with that today, storage spaces is the recommendation for standard storage with VMs, because that sits above, that sits at the OS layer, so the guest layer. And so it basically is interjecting itself in that stream to some extent. So same concept, but it's done at the OS level, and it will work in that scenario.
Yeah, and the storage team is coming out with a feature which is codenamed Managed Disks. I don't know what the proper product name is going to be, whereby it is sort of managing a lot of that disk distribution across storage accounts and across regions to enable lots of VMs that have got the same sort of shared image to be able to go and do their thing.
Well, that's some great information on Dash, James. Really appreciate it. You guys, any more questions for James?
No, this is great. Thanks for coming on and talking about it.
Yeah, thanks, James. This is awesome.
And cool. If you can send me some of those links, I know you gave me the GitHub link, but if anything else you want to add, I'll put them in the show notes, so our listeners will have ready access to them when we put out the show in a day or two.
Perfect.
All right. Great.
Great.
Thanks, James.
Cool.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.